B-Pod Studios.
This man provides some great analysis on Philly's post-game and pre-game on NBC Sports Philadelphia. And today, the Phillies won Sunday, but we're not really happy about certain things. And let's bring in Corey Seidman on the Comcast Business Highline. Corey, why aren't we happy?
Why aren't we happy? Well, because this team has fallen well short of expectations, especially offensively. You know, we spent a lot of the season talking about the issues in the rotation and the bullpen, but a lot of those issues would have been masked if this Phillies team was hitting the way it was supposed to. If guys like Harper, Real Muto, Segura were producing the way they have in previous seasons, and that just has not happened. And that's why this team is only a few games over 500 this late into the season and fading fast.
All right, let's take it back to Friday. And Mr. McPhail had a lot of things to say. A rather snarky Mr. McPhail, I thought. And one of the things he actually dangled was, indirectly, don't get your hopes up, and we're not going to go for it because we'd rather conserve our prospects than to play for a one-game playoff. And I look at that and I go, if I'm the fan base, I am highly offended by a comment like that. How did you take it?
Well, I do understand it from the standpoint that, you know, you don't want to push all your chips into the middle for a one-game playoff. But the other aspect of this is the Phillies spent, you know, more than $430 million this past offseason to bring in talent and to raise expectations. And it would be, you know, one heck of a half measure instead of a full measure if they were to just do all that work in the offseason and then not improve the rotation, the bullpen, the back of the roster, the bench, you know, in mid-July. Facet of it is there has to be the right player available. And I do not see a starting pitcher available right now who is worth trading your top prospects for. Like, I don't think Marcus Stroman is worth that. I think Marcus Stroman is a number three starter on a contending team. Someone like Madison Bumgarner, a half-season rental, he's not going to cost you your top prospects. Zach Greinke, if the Phillies get into that market, Zach Greinke probably would be more so salary relief from the Diamondbacks as opposed to getting top prospects back. If there was a Justin Verlander, a Garrett Cole, like a top-flight pitcher who is available in this trade period, you know, I think it would make a ton of sense for the Phillies to pursue that. But given the pieces that are available, you know, I agree. I don't think it's worth it to trade some of your best young players for a pitcher who's pretty good but not great.
Who are their best young players, by the way? I mean, maybe my list is a little shorter than yours. Are their best young players?
So Alec Boehm, who's been tearing it up in the minors.
Okay, all right, Alec Boehm, they're not going to trade. They've already said that. Who else?
Spencer Howard, who's a hot pitching prospect.
And he's untradeable. He would be untradeable? Spencer Howard?
I wouldn't say that he's untradeable. It's just that, trading him for someone who's going to slot into the middle of your rotation and give you a 3.75 ERA, I don't think that's worth it. I mean, I completely agree that this Phillies team needs a lot more, but I just think you can acquire those pieces for a little bit more cheaply than trading away guys who are at the top of your prospect list.
Okay, Corey, I get it, but here's the problem. You can't set up your fan base for a playoff season early in the year and then call that back. Don't you have a duty to cover up your misjudgments? The ones that you could have corrected earlier, you could have come into the season questioning your starting rotation. They did not. They believed in it. You could have gone after Keuchel and Kimbrel. They did not. So how is the fan base supposed to now take the rest of the season? We're supposed to be prudent now?
No, the team does have an obligation to continue improving. I mean, the Phillies did not make all those moves to be okay winning 78 games or 82 games. It is incumbent upon Matt Klentak and Andy McPhail to improve this team. It just might come in the form of pitchers like Andrew Cashner, who was traded to the Red Sox this past weekend. You know, guys who aren't huge needle movers that improve you slightly, but don't really, like, you know, set you up for immense future success. You know, it might be guys who are back end of rotation pitchers. You know, it's funny because you mentioned Keuchel. Earlier in the season, I was wondering, is Keuchel even that much of an upgrade over guys like Eflin, Pivetta, Velasquez? I think that we have seen enough now to know, yes, a guy like that is a substantial upgrade over Pivetta, Eflin, Velasquez. Those guys just have not improved enough to the point to be trustworthy. I'd say Eflin has, but the other two have not. So at this point, any available pitcher, a number four, a veteran number four, any of those guys are an improvement in the back of the Phillies rotation, because what we're also seeing right now is that Jake Arrieta pitching through the bone spur, you might get a lot of starts like Sunday, where he pitched five innings. He was pretty effective, but he couldn't go more than five innings. And you can't have a 3-4-5 in your rotation where you're happy to get five innings. I mean, that's just not sustainable. It wears out the bullpen.
But again, we go back to like judgments of baseball people. Where was the data that would suggest that those three guys were going to do something for you? Where was it? They pie in the sky. It's crossing your fingers.
Well, the Phillies will say with Pivetta that they looked at the strikeouts, walks, home runs, and that foretold that he was going to take the next step. That obviously has not happened, and they have to face the reality now, which is that these guys just aren't good enough, especially Pivetta and Velasquez.
So it took a half season for them to figure this out. 3 years worth of watching these guys well enough.
Apparently, although I do also think that it was a failure by Matt Klentak to not address these issues earlier in the season, because it's not okay to just, you know, wait until July 25th, mm-hmm. bolster your team with a couple more players, and hope to make a run over those final 2 months. Like, he made the Jake Bruce move at the beginning of June, the first few days of June. That was supposed to be a bench move, but it turned into an everyday role for Bruce because of the Andrew McCutchen injury and the Adam Haseley injury, etc. But that was the only move. It was clear that this Phillies team needed at least one more reliever, probably two. It was clear that this Phillies team needed at least one more starting pitcher, probably two. And while you can't force another team to trade with you, there had to have been ways to improve this team, beyond the final 2 weeks of the trade period.
I just rankle when the president comes up, says we're not good enough, and you're going to like it. It offends me as a member of the Philly fan base. Forget the analyst part of it, because I know as an analyst, you're going, oh, yeah, it's probably not worth it, trading your best prospect for a marginal guy. I get that part of it, but you can't set up your fans and then just pull the rug out from under them.
Yeah, I think that a lot of comments made by Klentak and McPhail over the last 3 weeks have almost been not designed, but, you know, have the unintended consequence of, like, having fans lower their expectations. I remember a couple weeks ago when Klentak was asked about the Phillies' underperformance, and his response was that some of the projection models had the Phillies at, like, 83 to 85 wins. Mm-hmm. Well, 83 to 85 wins wasn't anybody's expectation around here. It wasn't the front office's expectation. It wasn't John Middleton's expectation when the Phillies were holding that press conference for Bryce Harper in Clearwater. So I took that, and then I took the McPhail comments this past week as a way of, like, them trying to almost caution the fan base. The season's probably not going to turn out the way that
it's exactly what they're doing. And and by the way, you'll like it, is what I get out of, you know, the snarkiness of McPhail. But let's move on to another thing. The Arrieta thing, yesterday, I like the fact that he tried to gut it out. He's obviously not the same pitcher. And afterwards said, well, this is going to be like this all the time, and you never know what you're going to get from me in the whole bit. How in the world can they do that? How in the world can they send this guy out with bone spurs, with hoping that he can get through five innings?
Well, it's an indictment of all else they have in their system. You know, if they had pitchers ready to go at AAA, they wouldn't be doing this. If they, you know, if Kohler and Eniel De Los Santos, if these guys came up and thrived in the opportunities they had, then I think the Phillies would feel more comfortable going with their alternatives. But right now, there just are not alternatives. And, you know, Arrieta did not pitch poorly on Sunday. He got ground balls. He got some weak contact. I don't know how sustainable that is, though, especially, you know, as you start pitching. He's coming off the All-Star break there. He got a little more rest. That might not be the case every start for him, that he's feeling okay enough to induce weak contact like that. It's really weird the way the Jake Arrieta thing has gone now a year and a half in. He clearly has not been worth the money. He clearly has not met expectations. And I see this a lot, like on social media or when people email me. The fan base does not like Jake Arrieta. And I get that a lot of that is because of his underperformance. Uh-huh. But I think some of it is also that he hasn't helped himself with comments he's made after games. I just wonder, you know, this is a town that loves people who play through pain, who play hard. Yeah. I wonder if there's a way that he can kind of build back some goodwill by doing this.
Well, he might be, but the goodwill, like, who? I don't care about the goodwill. I care that he can pitch. And he said yesterday that he can't throw the cutter. He can't throw his cutter. All right? It hurts. So he's now eliminated a pitch, and he's telling hitters, don't expect me to throw the cutter. Like, how effective can a guy with a bone spur trying to get through five innings, his velocity declined as the game went on, and they're going to send him out every fifth day? It's like a joke.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he needs that cutter, because if you're a sinker-cutter guy and you have the ball moving in opposite directions with those two pitches out of the same arm slot, that's the way that you keep hitters off balance. So what it means is that we're going to see just more of the sinker, curveball, changeup mix from Arrieta, and he really has not been able to throw that changeup too effectively in his last couple starts. It wouldn't shock me if the Phillies tried this two or three more times with Arrieta and then inevitably shut him down. But if he can give them five innings, two runs, I think they're just going to keep doing it.
All right. Last question. Is it time now for us to finally lose patience with Harper? This fan base has had a lot of patience with him. It's ridiculous that he's not hitting home runs.
Yeah, I think it is time. I mean, we're like 60% plus into the season here, and he has an OPS that's barely over 800. That's not what the Phillies paid $330 million for. I don't think that he needs to be Mike Trout, but he can't be like the 50th best hitter in baseball, and that's kind of what he's been. The Phillies needed their top-heavy group to carry them, and so far, you look at the first half of the lineup, the only guy who has met expectations has been Rhys Hoskins. You know, he's hit for power, he has the 400 on base percentage, but Harper hasn't hit for enough power. He hasn't carried this team the way that we expected, and I think that one of the major reasons that Phillies fans have been a little more patient with Harper than they would have been with players previous to this is that Harper has made an impact in the field. You know, he's really been a quality right fielder with the throws and the diving catches. He's been really aggressive on the base paths. And I think that the way that he plays has endeared himself to this fan base, even if the power production hasn't been there.
Mm-hmm.
But look, that's what matters. What matters is hitting three-run homers and carrying your team offensively from being a middle-of-the-pack offense to the upper echelon offensive team you were supposed to be. I don't think that you can look at this and say, all right, this is who Bryce Harper is going to be every year of his career. Because if you look at his career, it's almost been kind of random from year to year. There's like the MVP season where he was incredible. There was an injury-shortened season 2 years ago where his numbers were off the charts. But then there's also more than a few years where his OPS has been in the low to mid-800s. So over this 13-year tenure, I think you're going to see some years like this. You're going to see some years where the power production is huge, and the Phillies will probably just live with it based on the average of what he produces.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.